Change doesn't wait. Sometimes it storms in, sometimes it creeps quietly, unfolding in ways we notice later. It stirs in boardrooms, classrooms, streets, and communities, wherever people act with purpose. What moves you? A vision? A challenge? A belief in business as a force for good? And what holds you back? External factors or limiting beliefs? I'm Gary Watts, and this is Moved, the podcast of 289 people inspiring change. I'll be speaking with people exploring what first moved them, what they've achieved, and the challenges they've had to overcome, both outside and within. Each episode is about human performance, leadership, sustainability, doing the work that matters, and the moments that change everything. This is Moved. Today, I'm joined by David Hawes, co-founder and director of Net Zero International, who've been on a mission over the last 4 years to help businesses measure, manage, and minimize their carbon footprint. I first met David earlier this year on a sustainability leadership program that David was one of the main tutors on. It was an excellent program, and it was then I got to know more about David, what he's doing, and the situation in the UK as a whole. I'm extremely pleased now to have him join us as a guest. David, welcome to the podcast.
Great to see you again, Gary. Yeah, really looking forward to our conversation. So thank you very much for having me on the podcast. Really exciting.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. It was fabulous to see you on the course earlier this year, and we had that was the first time we'd met, and a number of conversations on this topic. So yeah, great to have you join us on this.
Yeah, the course is great, and it was great to have you on there, and your contribution was really well received. So I'm sure we'll talk about the course at some point.
Yeah, thank you very much. So let's get to the beginning then, in terms of, it'd be great for listeners to hear a little bit about you and your background and the moment that brought you to starting Net Zero International.
Yeah, so I'd done a sort of a corporate, you know, 30 years in corporates, worked for big organisations. I worked for RAC and then Sky and then British Gas. But say it was really probably when I was at Sky, I got quite involved in ocean plastic rescue. So Sky were really sort of quite progressive about trying to take plastic out of the oceans and do things about. And they were also really trying to work on removing packaging and improving processes and all these sorts of things. So so that really sort of sparked my interest. I'd always had an interest, but that really sparked my interest. And then when I went to British Gas, part of my main role was there, as well as managing the engineers, was to look at how we could sort of, you know, get into the domestic market for heat pumps and for solar, because that was starting to grow as an industry. And then I think the real turning point was 2019, when the UK government announced net zero would be law. And we had to get to net zero by 2030. So, you know, 30 years away at the time. And I thought, wow, you know, that's a hell of an ambition and an achievement. So I decided to take redundancy from British Gas at sort of at the end of 2020. And then I spent 6 months really working out what I wanted to do. I met my couple of business partners. We were thinking at the time of helping sort of tradespeople move into more of the renewable space, because that was obviously going to be a growing demand. But actually, increasingly, I sort of found out more and more about carbon accounting and, you know, how to measure and how to help businesses. And that really sparked an interest. And I became fascinated about it, frankly. I just read everything I could. I just really understood it. And we decided to set ourselves up as a business to help organizations, I think, as you mentioned in the intro, to measure their emissions, you know, reduce their emissions and make an impact. And that was in 2021. So we set the business up in the August of 2021. And then there was COP in that November, which was on these shores, if you remember rightly. That was in Glasgow so COP26 in Glasgow was also another big event that really had made us think, well, actually, if we can get into the industry and start thinking about that, there's gonna just be this more of a tidal wave of requirements. And also, frankly, it's the right thing to do. So yeah, making a difference, and from helping businesses, but also making a difference from a planetary point of view, that makes us sure we're doing the right thing.
Very much so. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear that there's a thread that goes through a good part of your career with the work at Sky and what they were doing with ocean plastics and through to British Gas and heat pumps through to this. So it's not just what you've been doing through Net Zero International, but a thread that's been running through that period.
Yeah, I think it's always been something I've been really interested in, you know, planet and all that sort of stuff. I think that's always been something that, say, has been of interest to me. But I think what we really understood as the Net Zero Law came out was there aren't many businesses doing what we're doing. You know, there's not a lot of understanding and help. So there was going to be an opportunity to get into that space, which is why we sort of started the business then.
Yeah. And actually, if we just zoom out slightly, because most people have heard the term net zero, but probably different people would describe it in different ways. I probably would, you know, maybe not even describe it consistently. But what would you, for listeners that have heard the term but aren't necessarily clear on exactly what it does mean, how would you describe it?
So net zero is around trying to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions that we put into the atmosphere, you know, in the way we live our lives through generally burning of fossil fuels. And it's about reducing those emissions down. And it's all based on the Paris Agreement of 2015. So there was a UN COP back in Paris in 2015, where this sort of, you know, big agreement had been made from a global perspective that we need to reduce emissions to ensure that the temperature of the world doesn't get more than 2 degrees above pre-industrial level, ideally no more than 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels by the end of this century, by 2100. So net zero is about the pathway to be able to make sure that we can keep those temperatures to within those sort of, you know, planetary boundary sort of, you know, sort of safe spaces. And just to put that in context, currently we're heading towards probably 2.7 degrees temperature increase by 2100. So we're well above and exceeding what the science is telling us in terms of, and then of course the consequences of that. So negation is about mitigation, it's about reduction, but also I see net zero as such a huge opportunity for us to transform our economy, our society, our environment in so many positive ways. So, but there's a technical term, but I think you're absolutely right. The term does get, you know, people aren't quite sure what it means. And it's also being a bit sort of taken and polarized at the moment as well, I believe, which is a real shame because there are so many benefits, as I mentioned, to achieving net zero.
As well as the technical definition that you took us through, which is really helpful, what does it mean to you personally?
So I think, you know, I'm a person of a certain age now. I've got two, you know, I've got a sort of 21-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old son. And I think it's incumbent on any generation to leave the world in a slightly better place it was than we found it. And if you look at all the data and all the evidence, we're not going to do that for our younger, you know, younger people, because the world is going to be very different as climate change starts to impact the way people live their lives. You know, we may say fortunate is the wrong word, but you know, we may not be quite as badly impacted where we live, but certain parts of the world are going to be significantly impacted. So it may sound sort of trite, but it's the reality. It's about leaving the world better than it was when we found it. It really is as simple as that for me.
Yeah, and I know the company itself is international, but from a UK point of view, where do we stand in the UK at the moment?
So the UK were one of the first countries in the world to put net zero into law back in 2019. And we've done well, you know, we've reduced our emissions by just about half since 1990. So we've done a lot of, you know, work to reduce our emissions. And then what happens is we have plans. We have these 5-year budgets to reduce our emissions that are set in law through government. So we're currently on track to achieve our latest budget, which takes up to sort of 2032. But the next budget, there is a risk that we won't achieve that. So the government have actually been taken to court. And there's a court case that the government need to respond to by October to explain how they're going to get us back on track. And I think that's the other thing that people forget when they sort of talk about net zero, or they say, well, we should not do it. It's a legal requirement in this country, and it's generally had political consensus that that's the right approach. Because again, whilst there's all these environmental benefits of being net zero, there are so many, say, societal and also economic benefits of moving to net zero. You know, getting more of our power through solar, through wind over time will definitely save money for people, and it's more efficient, you know, and all those things. I'm not going to get into the polarization that's currently probably people hear, but there's a lot of good evidence that says that it makes a lot of sense from an economic point of view. And we're going through the green economy, aren't we? From that point of view.
Absolutely. One of the significant what you just shared in terms of in the UK, and you mentioned that we were one of the first countries to make this legally binding, but in the UK, the emissions, you said, had halved in this country since, was it 1990, 1991?
That's right, yeah, 1990, yeah, that's right, yeah, which is when we start to measure from.
Yeah, halved since that point. So that's significant, yet the UK is still in court in terms of like the progress that's been made.
Yeah, so we used to have, I'm going to use average, it's about 800 million tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent that the UK used to produce. It's now about 400 million. There's a couple of main factors for that reduction. The renewables that we've put into the electricity grid, and we've taken coal out. So coal is one of the worst emissions, you know, from a fossil fuel perspective. It has one of the biggest impacts from a global warming potential. So we've taken coal out. We don't have coal now generating any electricity, which, again, if you go back 30 years, is an incredible achievement. It goes to show we can change. And obviously, we've also put more renewables on the grid. And then we're starting to see the decarbonisation of industry. We're starting to see decarbonisation of transportation. And then also we have moved some of our territorial emissions, as they're called, to other parts of the world. So we are, you know, there are emissions in other parts of the world because we're buying things from those countries. So we have to address those as well. But I'm talking purely territorial emissions, which are our emissions. So yeah, we have done well, but some of that, frankly, has been the easier things to do. Okay. We're now moving into some of the more difficult challenge. But almost half of the next reduction is all down to electrification. It's all down to adoption of heat pumps into the domestic market and the sort of electrification of our transport systems, really. They're about half of all those emission reductions that we need to achieve.
So fabulous progress has been made in terms of the 50% reduction, but in some ways it's the easier part, and now it's getting harder. How are you feeling about the chances of us being able to really achieve the harder part now, the next half that's, like you say, much more difficult?
Yeah, I think there's a very good pathway to be able to do it. So there's something called the Climate Change Committee in the UK, which gives government advice on, you know, pathways. They call them the balanced pathways of reduction. And they take into account, again, not just the data to get us to net zero, but they understand that we can't do that and throw the economy out, or we can't do that and, you know, not still, you know, live good lives. So they publish some very good data and information for the government on an annual basis. The government don't then have to take that, but they will take the advice and then make decisions. I think there are some sort of good areas where the government is starting to focus on. So, for example, again, the increase in renewables, allowing onshore wind, for example, you know, those things. But there are some things that it's easy for me to say, oh, government should do this and government do that. But we all know governing is difficult. So, you know, you the government don't have a choice. They have to come up with a plan to get back on track. But we're waiting to see that plan. But I go back to my point I made a moment ago. Now, half of the emissions reduction is in the, you know, electrification of our home heating and our, you know, transportation systems. And again, the evidence is starting to show that that is actually cheaper for people to run. The last Climate Change Committee said the average household in real terms by 2042 would be about £1,400 a year better off. So this is my point. It's not just an environmental benefit. There's an economic benefit and then a societal benefit as well. And that's what we've got to consider. We can't just go for GDP growth all the time. We've got to think about the planetary boundaries to be able to achieve that. The other thing I would say, Gary, is that the cost of not doing will almost always outweigh the cost of doing these changes, because obviously if we don't make the changes, climate change will have a bigger impact and we'll see more drought. You know, we've had one of the, it is probably going to be the hottest summer on record. You know, we're going to have more wind events. And I'd say I'm only talking about in the UK. Obviously around the world, it's going to be even worse from that perspective. Yeah.
I mean, it's compelling whenever I hear about it and the things I followed with COP and the Climate Change Committee and so on, and listening to you talk about the societal benefits, the environmental benefits, obviously, but the economic benefits as well and the opportunity. And it's felt that in large part, that's where everyone was, you know, it feels more recently like there is a bit of a backlash and headwinds against net zero. And the term net zero, which I would always say is such a positive term, is often also being used in more negative ways now. And I definitely wouldn't want to get into politics, but it seems like it's moved from being something that nations and companies largely agreed on and people, everyone was getting behind it and so on with the commitments, to suddenly being a bit more of a political football even. What would you say in terms of where we stand now with the term net zero and in a way reclaiming that positivity that you just went through?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting conversation, and you may remember on the course we talk about this, you know, has net zero almost become so polarized, should we think about a different phrase? But I think whatever phrase we use, it will be polarized either way, because you've got, and again, I don't want to get into politics, but you've got some people, sort of people who say, well, climate change has always happened, this is, it doesn't matter what we do, this is always just the way it is. And again, there's very good scientific evidence to demonstrate that actually the increase in temperatures is far greater than, in terms of, you know, time frames, than it has been historically. And then you've got the other people who think we should, you know, not fly, we shouldn't, you know. So you've got these two extremes. But actually, I think most people probably live down the middle of that. If you look at all the polling, most people are concerned about climate change. They do think it's real. They do want to see us making a difference. But they are worried about the impact on, you know, are the homes going to heat properly with a new technology? If they buy an EV, are they going to be able to get to where they need to get to? So we need to make sure that the technology improves, and we're seeing that. You know, EVs are a great example. The adoption of EVs is continuing to grow, you know, at good rates, and at the same time we're seeing an increase in the number of charging points. So as the demand of cars is increasing, the supply of charging points is increasing in line with that, and we just need to make sure that keeps going. And the government just announced a discount. So if you're going to buy an EV, there's a discount scheme that's just been announced, same with the heat pump. So there's a requirement for government to incentivize and adopt, because as you know, it's a market thing. You know, things that are new and there's not a lot generally charge more, but as that gets to adoption point, the price differentials will change. So I think it's a shame that it's been polarized so much. It gets me frustrated, but I think we've said this before, you know, us two having a pretty mature conversation about this probably doesn't make good telly. You know, they want somebody who's going to be, you know, we're all doomed, and we want someone saying, well, no, there's no such problem, you know, whereas us having a good middle of the road conversation about this good pathway that we can achieve for everybody doesn't make good telly, frankly.
No, maybe in some ways, sometimes adversity can be helpful because it makes you dust yourself down and really think about the arguments and so on. So maybe in some ways it might come through this even stronger.
It's a really good point. And most people will do what they can. You know, most people will do what they can to try to reduce their emissions associated. But it's knowledge, it's understanding. It's, again, making systems easier for people to do that. It's about changing the way that we operate in this new low carbon economy that we're moving to. But the change is happening. You know, if you look at the uptake of renewables onto the grid and around the world, that's not going to go anywhere. That's only going to go one way. That's only going to continue. You know, that is just, it's an exponential growth. It's incredible, really.
Yeah. And then am I right that it's 10 years since the Paris Agreement?
Yeah, it's the 10th anniversary. Yeah. So it was November 2015 that it was agreed. So that was the UN COP21. That, you know, they held every year, and it was held in Paris, and that's where this first ever, you know, agreement had been made to say that we need to keep, you know, the global temperature to no more than 2 degrees above, say, pre-industrial level, and ideally less than 1.5. That was the first time that had been documented, and it was agreed by, you know, almost all parties. So yeah, we'll see this COP30, which is in Brazil this year, is sort of a 10th anniversary review of where we are since Paris. Now, we have made changes, you know, we have made progress. Is it enough to keep the temperatures to below that degree? Not at the moment. That's the risk, is that although we're doing things, 2 degrees is still unlikely to be achieved based on the latest data and science that we see.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of what the tone of it will be in terms of that, the 10 years, the symbolism of that, and the stock take and progress, but something's not there? And do you have a sense of the tone?
I think it's going to be a difficult one, frankly, because of the American. And again, I don't want to get into politics, but obviously, you know, President Trump has pulled the Americans out of the Paris Agreement. So they've given the formal notice, and that takes effect from January. So I think the Americans will still go, but they won't want to get involved in any of the conversations. And of course, one of the challenges with the COPs is to get you have to have everyone agree to the wording of the text. So I think that's going to make it a challenge. I also do think it's probably time to stop and reflect about the COP process and is it delivering what we need it to deliver? Is it fit for purpose? There's lots of conversations about that. So yeah, I think it's going to be a tricky one, frankly. I'd say mainly because of the American position now and moving out of the Paris Agreement or withdrawing from it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. Sometimes you take a step back before three steps forward, so it'll be interesting.
Sometimes, yeah, and the rest of the world aren't following that. You know, they are still going ahead with the net zero plans. You know, some are accelerating those plans. So, despite what's happening in America, again globally, there's still a lot of activity going on to reduce emissions accordingly.
Yeah, yeah. And bringing it back a little bit more locally into some of the specific achievements and breakthroughs. Have there been clients you've worked with or projects you've worked with where you've thought, yes, this is why we do this, where you've had really great breakthroughs?
I think one of the things we really try and focus on is trying to help businesses, what we call embed the culture of climate reduction and action within organizations. You can do this because you have to do it because you've got to, you want to win a tender. So therefore, you've got to do it because you've got to tick a box, as a compliance type thing. We don't really work with clients on that. We're more trying to embed the fact that being a low carbon business is good for business because you are going to win tenders. It's good, obviously, from a financial point of view because you're going to save money generally because at the heart of, net zero is being more efficient with what we have and therefore there's generally savings. And I'll give you an example of that in a moment. It's good from an attraction perspective. You can attract more staff because most polling, again, shows people want to work, especially younger people, want to work for companies that take sustainability seriously. And it's also good from a retention point of view. And also, there are increasingly, you can't get grants or you can't get loans if you don't have. So there's lots of reasons for doing it. But I'll give you one example. We had a company that they bring in sort of workwear from the Far East, and then they brand it in the UK, and then they send it out to their customers. And what used to happen was they got their uniform from the Far East in a cardboard box. They'd rip the cardboard box open. They'd take the uniform. They'd put the branding on it for the particular company. They'd then put it in their own branded cardboard box, send it out to their customers. And what they decided to do was reuse all the boxes that the uniform was coming. So they wrote to their customers to say, look, the box you're going to get isn't our flashy one anymore. It might have a little bit of damage, but we're going to send it to you. And they saved sort of significant thousands of pounds, because there were two issues there. One is because they didn't go and have to get rid of all the old cardboard. So there was no cost of getting rid of the cardboard. And secondly, obviously, they didn't have to go and buy new boxes either. So at the heart of going to be net zero, it's about just being more efficient with what we've got. It's about, if you think of nature doesn't waste anything. Nature just reuses and reuses. Whereas we, and especially in the West over the last sort of 40 years with globalization, have become pretty wasteful. We've become this sort of throwaway economy. And that's what we have to change, really, is that circularity. So that's one customer I always tell the story about. Because, again, at the heart of what we're doing, it's not just about reducing emissions, but there are financial, and it's got to make business sense. Otherwise, as a company, why would you do this if it doesn't make business sense? So we work on that approach, and then say trying to embed through engagement with teams about people making a difference. Because ultimately, Gary, we've talked about this, what the way we're going to get to net zero is billions of people around the world doing things slightly differently. And that's really what we want to see. So if you can get all your team, turn the light off, only buy what they need to buy, don't do the waste, car share where possible, all of those small things, aggregate that up over, billions of people around the world, it makes a big difference. I think you've heard me say ripples in the pond. Every time we talk to people, it's another ripple in the pond, and the ripple in the ponds create this tidal wave of change, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, fascinating. It's fascinating the story you told there, because it's just a small thing, such a simple thing, really, around using the boxes and not having the process of emptying them and swapping them out. And they wrote to the consumers. Do you know how that was received by the consumers? Because there can be, I think, around the consumer experience sometimes.
They didn't have any problems from any you know, no one says, oh no, we want it in a nice box, you know. And I think it's I mentioned my children, 21, you know, a lot of, especially my daughter, a lot of her clothes she gets from vintage charity shops. You know, this sort of circular economy, you know, this reuse, you know. When I was her age, if I'd got my clothes from a charity shop or, you know, or a second hand, people would have looked at me and laughed at me, frankly. So we are starting to see societal things change. But yeah, try to buy recycled, upcycled, you know, we're seeing repair cafes come everywhere. It's great to see the circular economy can really benefit some of this change. And it's, again, it's about small differences aggregated up have a big difference. That's what we're really trying to achieve. And we're trying to create a community of companies that can, you know, collaborate, work together. So we have a like a waste sort of a process where if you've got something you don't need, there might be another company within our, you know, ecosystem that might actually want to use that, for example, for their own use. So there's less waste, which is great.
Yeah, like you say, ripples in the pond. I think often if you communicate with consumers and explain why you're doing things so their consumers responded to that really well and so on, then it can be a really positive thing. It makes me think of supermarkets. I don't know if they still do this as much, but I always remember hearing about fruit and veg in supermarkets and how it all had to look uniform and perfect. And if there was a blemish, you know, pretty much that couldn't be on the shelves. And certainly when I heard that as a consumer, almost horrified to think, well, I wouldn't mind. It would be absolutely fine, particularly maybe if you communicated the waste that happens, you know, because of that.
I think one of the supermarkets has a product called Wonky Veg now. I think they literally, you know, do sell you the. But you're right. Yeah, I think that's been the issue. We've wanted things to, you know, in this sort of materialistic sort of world that we've created, we've wanted everything to look perfect and be this and that. And I think we are changing, which again, I think is a very good thing.
You touched on earlier around like some aspects of it being kind of culture and change. And when you think to some of the organizations that are being most successful on this type of journey, are there any particular like mindsets or habits that they share that you'd call out?
I think the key for any success for a business at the moment is it's got to be led by the top. It's got to be understood and agreed at board level. You know, we work with companies where it's not necessarily at that level. Someone below is trying to manage it and they struggle to get time or they struggle to get. So that's the number one I would say to any company is it's got to be owned. So if you're a company owner, you know, own it yourself, or if you're in a bigger organization, it's at least got to be at board level conversations, because otherwise, like you know, things won't happen if it doesn't have that type of level. So I think that's the number one. And then the other thing I would say is, again, trying to create almost like a team or a, you know, I've heard, you know, Net Zero Heroes. And again, one of our companies particularly we work with, they're exemplars in this. You know, they have a fortnightly catch up with about 10 people within the organization, and they talk about actions that they're doing, and they're trying to, again, embed that engagement and say that culture of carbon reduction plan. So yeah, I think engagement is definitely key, but it's definitely got to be owned by someone significant or senior in the organization for this to happen.
Yeah,
without doubt.
Grassroots can be good, and a team that's driving it can be good, like the kind of green and initiative and so on. But without board backing, it can be difficult. So it starts.
Because, like, you know, in any business, you've got all these different sort of conflicting priorities. This needs to be within that. The other thing is it needs to be embedded into the overall strategy rather than this separate strategy. It needs to be embedded in, you know, this is our strategy for our business to grow. And part of that is that we are going to get to net zero, because that will help us to grow.
Yeah. And I imagine it's less so now, but if you do have a board that considers it a burden or a distraction, what would be a message that you would share with them to help them see the real positivity of it?
I think, again, it's got to make business sense. So you know, most businesses will do things because either they'll save money, they'll make money. You know, there's very little much more, isn't there? If you think about organisations, so what we try and explain is that by doing this, they're going to probably do both. They're going to probably make more money because you're going to win contracts or whatever, or they're going to save money because they're going to have more efficiency in terms of, you know, say, reducing bills, reducing waste. Now, there may be some investment at some point. We talked about heat pumps, or we talked about solar, you know, your own solar or EV. There is an upfront cost, but the overall returns on that over time will do that. So I think that's the thing. It's got to make business sense. Like, I'll give you one example of a company we work with. They set themselves a net zero target of 2040. And we went in with their board and had a board session, and they didn't really understand why they'd set that target. It was just because they worked for the NHS. The NHS wants to get to net zero by 2045, and they did a bit of a normal business. Well, we're going to go quicker. We're going to be faster. You know, we're going to do, you know, because you can do that in lots of business. And by the end of our board session, they completely agreed that it should be 2045. They reset and they understood that actually, you know, this is a long term change, which again is quite unusual, isn't it? Most businesses don't have a 20, 25 year business plan, but net zero sits in that space.
Love to come on to things you're doing more generally in terms of communication and awareness. Obviously, there's the course that I attended earlier this year that you were a tutor on, but can you tell us a bit more about that and the things you're doing there?
Yeah, so we work with a company called Estu Global. I know their owner through the Hertfordshire Chamber, which is where I live. And so they run a sustainable business manager course as CMI level 5. It's one that you did, and I'm one of the lead tutors on that course. So it's a great qualification. I think it mixes three things so well. So it mixes the sort of knowledge about, you know, sustainability. It talks then about the leadership of sustainability, and then it talks about how to communicate. And we have these three different, you know, it's quite a unique program. So yeah, so I'm a tutor on that, and we've just got funding to do another three courses, one in Hertfordshire, one in London, and one in Norfolk and Suffolk, actually, which we've done one before. We then also run our own CPD accredited training. So we do sort of a 6-hour training course, and we're just about to add some other modules to that. So we do some training. So that's ideal for professionals who need to get their CPD qualifications. And it's a bit of a smaller version of the full course that you were on. So we do that. And then we do, you know, webinars. I think the other thing I haven't spoken about is we're founding members of something called the Carbon Accounting Alliance. So we're part of that. That was set up by you know, a couple of really good guys, sort of Andrew Griffiths and Emilian Hart. And we are, as an industry, trying to create some form of professional standards to be able to help businesses do this, because that's the other challenge at the moment, is we aren't a regulated industry. So you can get your carbon accounts verified, but you just have to get it verified by someone who's competent, but it doesn't explain what competent means.
Okay.
So we've been working, and I'm on the working group, to try and bring in a professional qualification for carbon accounting, and the sustainable business manager would be part of being able to do that. So, you know, we're really trying to increase the professionalism within our industry for two reasons. One is because you've got to protect your customers to make sure that they're getting the right advice and right service. And as you said, it can be quite complicated, so people don't have the full knowledge. You know, you need to be able to do that. But secondly is to create a worthwhile profession that, you know, has proper standards, like you would in accountancy or legal, HR. You know, we really need to see that in the carbon accounting and industry. So yeah, so that's really exciting, actually. I'm hoping to see some things come out of that at the end of this year. Yeah, some of the new standards. So yeah, that's exciting.
I would definitely advocate for the sustainable business management course. It was really good experience, and working together with Esther as you did. How many people have you put through that?
I think we must be approaching about 300 now, I would imagine, across the courses. Yeah, they've been running for just coming up for 2 years now. So yeah, it's got to be approaching about 300, with another probably 100 to go on these new cohorts. And it's great. And again, I talk a lot about this ripples in the pond. To me, that's, you know, 300 people out understanding, you know, and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we draw a bit towards a close, actually, to touch on that a little bit more, one of the things that feels like it's the case at the moment is there's just a lot of uncertainty. The world is really fast moving. I think sometimes people can sometimes feel a little bit lost, a little bit despair, like I can't make a difference. For those people that are, you know, having some of those emotions sometimes, what message would you like to leave for them, for the things that they can do?
Well, I think it's a really good point. You can make a difference. You know, people can make a difference by, I go back to that point I made earlier about this aggregation of lots of small things makes a big difference. So if everybody does a small bit, and don't beat yourself up over the things you can't do. So for example, you know, I flew on holiday this year. I don't worry about the fact that I've taken a flight this year, you know, because there's no low carbon flight option. Obviously, if I couldn't have flown, I wouldn't have. But, you know, we still want to enjoy a holiday. So it's about, firstly, not beating yourself up about the things that you're going to do. You've got to still enjoy. But it's about doing all these smaller things that you can, that say aggregated up will make a big difference. It's a bit like fitness, isn't it? You know, we all know that, you know, sort of doing a few steps every day and then you build it up over time makes your fitness better. This is a similar thing. You know, we're trying to make the world fit for the new future, and we just all need to do our few little steps that will start to increase that. So I do worry about, you know, if you look at climate anxiety, it's a really big issue now. And there is a lot of sort of, you know, negativity around what's happening, but we've got to be positive about the opportunity that this creates. There is a massive opportunity, say, from an economic perspective, from a societal perspective, and obviously the environment goes without saying. But every time you do something, it will have an impact. Because one of the things about climate change and the temperature is there's a lot of evidence that just a little bit here or a little bit there extra will make a big difference. So actually, you know, because there's these tipping points at a global perspective. So every time you do something slightly better does have an impact. And that's what people need to remember. It's about habits, isn't it, Gary? You know what it's like. You know, we just got to get into the habit of doing these things. But there also needs to be enabling ways to make it easier. So, for example, recycling is a classic example. It's quite complicated. We've got to make that simpler. EV, we've got to make that system easier for people to be able to know they're going to be able to charge their car. Most people would then think about it. The pricing is now being resolved. Heat pumps, got to make sure that they're fit for purpose in the home that you particularly have. And so you may not do that for 10 years, but there's lots of other things you can do in the meantime. My other one big advice is only buy what you need. You know, we're very wasteful. A third of all food in the Western world gets wasted. Doesn't, you know, we overpurchase significantly. So I know there's lots of cost of living issues and that, not for everybody, but there's lots of people that, you know, we are very wasteful. So we've got to think about all of those things. But yeah, every small thing that everyone does aggregated up makes a big difference. And that's that tidal wave of change that we need.
Yeah, absolutely. Tidal wave of change. The waste one is a significant one. I think I heard really recently that on average, you know, we need about 2,000 to 2,500 calories per day for each individual, you know, roughly. With our current food production globally, we produce enough for 5,000 calories a day per person, for every single person on the planet. So we produce enough globally for double than what we actually need. Yet in some places, that, you know, the distribution of that, I guess, is harder. And in there, a lot is clearly waste if we're producing 5,000 calories per person.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
So, yeah, really, really powerful things that you've shared. And I'm really grateful for the work that you're doing, because it's really powerful and important, whether it's the education and communication things that you're doing or the things that you're doing with your businesses. I think we're really grateful for the work you're doing. And also the thing you mentioned, actually, as hard as it can feel sometimes and sometimes against the grain, and are we making the progress we need to? But actually, it is iterative, it's exponential, and it's the change is coming, and you can see it all around you. In terms of working with nature and working with the environment and making our societies better for the future. So there's a lot that you can be positive about, actually.
Yeah, agreed.
You've done, obviously, many good things in the 4 years you've been running Net Zero International. As you think to the future, if you think, say, 3 years ahead and you've been even more successful in the next 3 years, what happened?
I think making more impact for more people, you know, I mean, ultimately that's what we're trying to achieve. You know, it's about, I mentioned about all those people we've engaged and the, you know, the companies that we work with, and, you know, we keep our metrics of, you know, how many staff they employ and stuff like that. So if we can impact, you know, more and more people to make difference, because it's not only when they work at, people won't just make the difference when they're at work, they'll also make those differences at home. So if you can educate people at work when they go home, they'll make a slight difference. And then when they go home, they also tell their family, or then make. So it's that, again, it's that sort of ripple effect. It sounds really trite. Obviously, we need to make sure we can run a business. We've got staff, we've got to pay. You know, there's all those elements of running a business. But yeah, just having a bigger impact and, you know, making, we don't have any real targets to, you know, manage X amount of million tons of carbon. We don't really do that. But it's just, yeah, it's just making the biggest impact we can for as many people as possible. yeah, it's probably nothing more than that. If I'm honest with you, at the moment, you know, it's all going really well. Yeah, we just want to keep growing. Yeah, we can say we can recruit more people. All our team, you know, are people who didn't have work before they worked with us. So, you know, there's other societal benefits that we're trying to bring as part of the business as well.
If people want to hear more about you, follow you online or hear more about your organisation, where would they go?
Yeah, LinkedIn, or obviously we've got a website, netzero.international, or just follow me on LinkedIn or the company on LinkedIn. But yeah, no, that would be great. And obviously anyone wants to reach out, always good to have conversations with people about, or if people are interested in the SDU course or anything like that, yeah, please feel free to reach out. That would be great to hear from people. Say it's all about impact ultimately.
Fabulous. And I'll put some of those things in the show notes as well.
Great. Thank you.
David, it's been fabulous to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me once again. Really enjoyed our conversation, Gary. Thanks.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of Moved. If it sparks something for you, subscribe and share it with someone who's looking to make a difference. I'm Gary Watts, and I'll see you next time as we explore what moves people and ideas forward.